You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And tonight I'm speaking to David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, Nick Kunzer from Sunland Private Wealth. Has got a month-end investment committee meeting, which is quite right. So he can't join us, sadly. But David, I think the one thing I want to talk about today, and it's not something that you normally would talk about, and that is a gold share. Its name is Goldfields. Now, when it opened this morning with the announcement it was buying a company called Yamana Gold, which I've never heard of, the share price immediately fell about 8-9%, and I thought, okay, that's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. It's down 20% now. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of percentage. What's happened?
Well, this is a massive purchase, and it's an all-share purchase.
Yeah.
Meaning that they will issue, as I said, for every one Yamana, they're going to, you know, you're going to get 0.6 of a Goldfield. So there's a quite a big dilution.
Yes.
If you consider the value of this share, I mean, this in rand terms, it comes to over 100 billion. Okay, and you've got 100 billion rand, and the market cap, as we stand, even with that drop, puts Goldfields at about 136 billion. So it gives you an idea how big it is. You know, this will virtually double the size or increase it by about 80%, whatever, you know, which is massive. So, and I think there's also not much knowledge about it. When you go into the, I have never heard of this.
No, nor
before,
I.
But that doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. But I think that's what it probably the dilution that scared the market off. It may be great down the line. It may be a wonderful long-term asset to own. But I think as time goes by, you're going to learn more about this mine. But I mean, this is that's one of the reasons that you've seen what it's done. But I think to make a decision like this, there must be something in it, you know, for them to have acquired to acquire this asset.
What I quite like about it is there hasn't been the transparency thing. I mean, it's come out of the blue. I don't think anyone could have predicted this. There was no cautionary announcement. I don't think there was anyway. I didn't say Goldfields is in discussions with another company and that may affect the price of its securities, that sort of thing, which you normally get. There was nothing. It just comes like a bolt from the blue.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's got to be a lot of approvals that will, you know, that will help take place before it goes through. But generally, these foreign deals get through a lot faster than local deals. I mean, it's still based in Johannesburg. I think the Goldfield still remains here. Look, the one thing about Chris Griffiths, he's got a very, very good name. You know, he was Kumba.
He went to Anglo Platinum.
But he was first at Kumba, did a brilliant job there. On to Anglo Platts and now to Goldfields as CEO. So he's never struck me as a person who's been very ambitious in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of ego. I'm giving a view, you know, having followed him for a long time.
Yes.
He seems to be a very solid man. So I don't think he's the kind of chap who would be reckless or hasn't thought about that. So I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. You know, considering his track record.
Okay, well, we'll watch this one with interest.
Goldfields has a long history. You know, this was Cecil Rhodes' business, the original holders of De Beers, you know, which eventually went to Anglo. So one day you can read Consolidated Goldfields. Oh, very, very colourful history.
Yeah. And who was the previous CEO? I interviewed him so many times, and he's got ginger hair. What was his name?
Nick.
Just Nick.
Gone.
Like Cher or Prince or something.
Yeah, you've got to warn me about these so I can look up in my dictionary.
Nick.
Or in my Rolodex.
Robertson, There was something,
Nick Holland.
Nick Holland, exactly right, yeah. I liked him.
He
was unpopular with market participants, I think.
He was a chartered accountant. Mm. But I think he did well. I liked him very much. So.
He was good.
But Chris has been more of an operator.
Okay, let's have a look at a couple of other things on the JSE today. Renet, they came out with their numbers, share price down 0.6%. I don't know if that's something that you look at, a holding, I mean, an investment holding company.
My views on
it. Yeah, well, go on then.
It's one of these companies that I've never really warmed to. I just wish the whole Remgro group, would kind of restructure and extract, give some more value like it used to do. Just seems to have gone sterile, like a lot of the whole, like Stellenbosch and Somerset West. You want something to come out of it. There's so many assets in the Remgro group. When Renet was formed, remember this was on the sale of British American Tobacco and big holdings were put in there. And there was hopes that this was going to be turned into a private equity, business or, like a private equity business. But we had much bigger hopes. And where it's gone, it just seems to be, I don't know. There is some type of insurance business there. I don't know too much about it and still got quite a few British American Tobacco shares in it. But we thought this was going to be a very active private equity business in which some, very attractive businesses would be infused, but it never really worked. What I'm trying to say, it never really captured the imagination of the business, never really got going. It certainly was outstripped or outmaneuvered by PSG, even though we're coming to the end of PSG's life. But I don't know. Sometimes I think, you rely on people's reputations and nothing really happens. Anyway, so I've never warmed to it. I'm sure that there's value there and, I have no doubt this is one other private equity business that trades at a massive discount to the underlying businesses.
Yes, I think so. What about Famous Brands? They came out. And, these numbers are spectacular, but obviously there's a base effect here. Revenue up 38% to $6.5 billion. Headline earnings per share up 568%. Operating profit up 428%. An operating profit margin has gone, this is quite interesting, it's gone from 7.2% to 9.7%. And if you take 2.5 and divide it into 7.2, what is that? It's about a 30% increase in operating profit margin. So during bad times, they've been obviously doing some rationalization here, David.
Well, remember, they were taken by the gourmet, what's it?
Gourmet Burger Kitchen, yeah.
Gourmet Burger and Kitchen. I mean, they were taken out by that company. And
flattened,
it was an absolutely awful decision. Mm. And I think it's textbook stuff because you do so many deals, which Kevin Hedick was doing, in quick succession. And I think there came a situation where nothing that we touch is going to go bad. In other words, we've just got the Midas touch and you start to lose your kind of, you don't do the same type.
You lose perspective and you don't go back to what you're very good at. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Mm. And this killed him. I mean, this was a share that I'm just looking here, in August 2016 was 170 Rand a share. So it gives you an idea of
Did it close?
Famous Brands, I'll give you the exact closing.
Thank you very much.
It's at 61. Call it 61.
Okay, so it's a third of what it was, but it's been much lower as well. And the other thing, David, what has happened to Gourmet Burger Kitchen? I mean, I know that there's this thing.
I think they just
have they written
I
it off.
I think they just wrote it off. Yeah, I think they just wrote it.
But
off.
Do they still own it, or did they sell it, or what happened?
They might own it. They might just own it, and it just lies there, probably dormant leases or whatever's happened. I have no idea. But sometimes that's the best thing you could do is just put a padlock on the front door and that's it and say, listen, it's costing us too much to keep it open. It's to allow customers in.
One day you're going to tell me what a write-off means. You're an accountant. One day you're going to tell me exactly what a write-off means. I mean, I can't write things off. I can't go to the bank and say, I'm sorry, I'm writing this off. This debt, I'm writing it off. But then I'll get blacklisted or something.
I think we're not harsh enough. That's where accounting, where I am at odds with the accounting here without getting too technical, is that you must account for everything so that it highlights past errors. We just write off past errors and we obliterate it out the book so it doesn't exist. But it does exist. it's cash, huge amount of cash that you spent that are just wasted. You know, it's like me taking a portfolio and going to my clients, okay, you know what? We're down 10 or 15%. I'm just writing it down.
I'm writing
to
it
the
off,
current
yeah.
values. Exactly. And we're going to start from the 1st of June. You know, that's going to be my new starting point. Not the 1st of January. Sorry, messed up.
You know? You're still not explaining it properly. Where does the money go? You've written it off.
It's gone. It's already been expended. It's gone. So all you're doing is cleaning up your books. So effectively, in your books, you've got the asset that you've bought, and slowly you've written that off. So all that happens is the cash has been expended. That's what I'm trying to say. So what happens is you've laid off $100 million to buy this company.
Right.
And what would happen is that would be an asset of $100 million in your books, and you would have less $100 million in cash. Okay. Now, so the cash is gone. It's in that $100 million. Now what happens, that asset is worth nothing. So all you do is you write it off against the profit and loss account. So it's just nothing more. And the asset goes. So,
and is there a tax benefit from writing something off?
Well, there may be. Not really. Not really. It might be in the fact that it's a trading issue. You might get some kind of tax relief. But this is a capital loss more than a trading loss. Although there might be some ways in which you can write it off. But all I'm trying to say is you have expended that 100 million rand that we're talking about. It's done. It's gone.
Finished.
You've paid it out of your bank. It's finished. And now you hide it away because you haven't got you haven't got that asset stock there. So instead of saying, hold on a sec, you know, when you work out return on equity and you work out, because by doing a journal entry, you know, by taking it out your books, none of the calculations bring that in again. So it doesn't expose, sorry if I'm getting too technical, but it doesn't expose your errors. You know what I mean?
You know what?
So I'm trying to explain it to you now. I'm saying if I bought a nice purse, so let's take famous brands, okay?
Okay.
So you're a client of mine. And I go and I bought them at 170 rand and they're now 60 rand. I say, Lindsay, listen, you know what? I'm just going to restructure your portfolio.
What do you mean restructure? You mean pay me back the money you've lost? What?
Yes,
restructure.
Exactly. You gave me 170 rand. It's 60 rand now. Let's write it off. Let's play. It doesn't exist. And you're going to start. You're going to start to measure me from 60 rand. I'll tell it to you in another way. Nick's my partner. This is the best way because this is how it works. Yeah. Nick and I in partnership. I bought them for you at 170 and now I'm getting a little too old in the head and Nick takes it over and Nick says, you know what, Lindsay? Shapiro cocked up. I'm going to start at 60. Don't worry about 170. You start to measure me from 60. What? You know what I mean?
But where does the phrase write-off come from? Write-off? What? I mean, it's much easier to say lost. L-O-S-T, not write-off. That's two syllables.
No, we don't use that anymore. No, we didn't lose.
You know what? You've been counters are incredible. It's unbelievable. The tangled webs that you weave, you lot. It's unbelievable.
David. No doubt. I'm on your side in that respect. Mm. So there are all these errors and, you know, all these errors that management made are hidden in the books. Mm. You know, just we love to refer it to as a journal entry because the cash is already gone. So a couple of assets, you know, you just vickle the books a bit, you know, and everything's back to fine. It's all done nicely. And you never suffer it. And that's why, and not only that, it doesn't affect your bonus. It doesn't affect anything. So it's actually a shame that these these kind of write-offs are never properly reflected in the books and that we don't highlight them, you know, and you can see it in the chart. You know, you can see it in the chart of where companies have come from and where they are now. So
all right.
It's a very big subject that you've raised.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, and it's, yes.
You must get on top of it. I'm not shouting.
I don't want to get on top of it. Because it annoys me. Because, first of all, I don't understand it. And anything I don't understand actually annoys me or bores me. And it's usually a combination of the both. I don't understand a write-off. Why can't you just say, we stuffed it up or cocked it up, as you said.
Yeah.
And, you know, this money's gone. And this is shareholder and
the
stakeholder money. It's gone.
People do not allow you to do that.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to...
Calling the PR people, the industrial relations, and everybody smooths over these things.
Oh, well, I'm going to set up a company called Brown Paper Bag PR. Brown Paper Bag PR, and I'm going to say, this person bought this company, and he's just lost 240 million rand of your money on this. And that's it. I'll just put a statement like that.
I would be brilliant with other people's money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would be brilliant. I could go to town sitting in a fancy at the head of the table making kind of decisions, you know, because I don't feel it. At the end of the day, it's a moral hazard. It's the shareholders who lose the money. And I don't even lose reputation because I vickle the books.
You know, vickle, that's another word that I haven't heard for a long time. David, do you ever remember a film called Other People's Money with Danny DeVito?
Yes.
That was a very good film.
Yeah. And,
yeah, well, that's you. You're the acceptable face of ripping people off. But you don't. I know that. I know you don't. Otherwise, you wouldn't be still be in business. You're the exception that proves the rule. Okay.
Yeah, but I did. All I'm trying to say is in America, that's why when you look at the U.S. accounts, many cases, the accounts are much more true reflection of businesses than sometimes in our businesses.
Okay.
Where they're not written off straight away and expenses are capitalized and, you know, we'll explain it one day. Anyway.
Hopefully not.
So, I continue to have a go at the accountants.
I know. You've always been very honest in that regard.
You know another thing?
Yes.
And I don't know if I was talking to you the other day. You know, if you go into the Companies Act, you know, which dictates what a company must disclose and gives you the schedules on how to prepare your balance sheets and your, you know, your financial statements and that. There's no such thing as core headline earnings or anything around that or what do they call normalized headline earnings. Those are all PR terms and those are all terms to kind of reflect other issues. So
and EBITDA.
Well, EBITDA is right. You know, it's a line in.
But in the States, there's no EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxation, depreciation, and
you
whatever.
You want to hear Buffett.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to hear Buffett on that because he says that depreciation is very much an expense, and interest. These are all expenses that any company has to face. But anyway, it's the modern approach. But you know what I do say is that all these normalized kind of earnings numbers and core earning numbers that you see, you know, choose which one you like, do not appear in the Companies Act. In other words, when you present your accounts to the tax man and when you present your accounts to the companies, you know, when you have to submit them, you have a completely different set of accounts or numbers.
Okay. Well, anyway. My head is now swimming, and I don't pretend to have understood much of it. But anyway, I liked you having a rant. It's good. I like you ranting. And why shouldn't you rant after all these years? Okay, let's have a look at the spot prices now. Dollar rand is 15.60. British pound against the rand, 19.66. Euro rand is 16.73. Euro dollar 107.20, which has barely changed from the last time that we spoke yesterday afternoon. British pound against the US dollar, the cable, is 1.26 on the nail, which is a 0.2% fall for the British pound. The gold price has fallen by $8 to $18.43. Platinum is flat at $9.54 an ounce. Palladium, 57 on the downside to $19.88, down 2.75%. Now, the oil price was interesting because at around about 9.30 this morning, David, it was $123.45 per barrel. So it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's now... this is quite a dangerous one. We spoke about it the other day. Right. It's pulled back a little bit, but not much. It's $123.45 again. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 again. Look at that. Up 1.5%. And the West Texas crude is 16.86. 116.86. All over the place. Natural gas prices, 8.51%. People in America, by the way, David, are paying, I don't know if you drive when you go there, if you hire a car, but it's now $5 a litre, is it, or a gallon? What is the unit?
No, they still do gallons.
Yeah, it's $5 a gallon now, all-time record high. It's quite a lot, isn't it?
Especially if you're driving one of those huge blooming Ford Rangers or those massive double cabs, you know.
Yeah, which a lot of them do, of course. What else have we got? I've got the S&P 500 futures. They've been all over the place. Yeah, they're just on the downside again. Little bit of nervousness, despite the fact that China is opening up. I do think that they're having a look at the oil price. S&P down around about
0.9%. The European CPI came out, or headline number, which was way higher than forecast. I think that was one of the data points that just upset the market today. Yeah. It came in, I don't know, 8.1 versus 7.4 in April, and it was above expectations. But it's all energy, which was up dramatically, and also food inflation. So I think that just unsettling markets. It now means that the ECB, the European Central Bank, are going to be forced to raise rates. It could be 50 points, whatever it is. So inflation's still dominating the headlines. You know that Powell and President Biden.
Biden, they're having a meeting right now, actually.
I don't know what they're going to do.
What's the harvest that's going to be reaped from that meeting? I mean, what are they going to say to each other? What's Biden going to say? Is he going to say, don't raise rates anymore because it's politically insensitive to do so, from my point of view? What will he say?
I don't know. They have to find a way to alleviate some of the prices, which are mainly food and oil. And I don't know how they're going to do it. They're already releasing gas. I mean, or what's it, oil from the reserves. So whether there's any tax relief, I don't know. Whether there is any margin for tax relief to bring down prices, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But this is something that just has to work its way through the system. There's no shortcuts, Lindsay. You know what I mean? And that's why we can't get too optimistic until we get empirical evidence where it's where you can actually see inflation coming down, and it's got to come down quite dramatically. You can't even if it comes down to 5 or 6. Yes, that's a big drop, but you've got to be heading more towards 3 or 4, or in a couple of years back to 2 or something like that. So I think we won't get any kind of relief on the markets or what's the word, confidence, until we see that happening.
We're often quite disparaging about politicians, but I tell you one person that always impresses me, the way she conducts herself and the way she speaks and the authoritative way that she, but also quite calm way that she delivers a speech, is Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission. Yeah. I mean, apart from her impressive political career, which, her CV is incredible, I think she's got 7 children, hasn't she? I think she's born 7 children. I think so, yeah. Maybe I'm mixing him up with somebody else.
No, you could, might possibly, very possible. But she comes.
Here we go, children, 7. I'm just looking up there. She's got 7 kids, and there's no adoptions there. She's had them all.
Wow.
Must be a Catholic.
Don't get into that area.
No, I'm not going to. I'm just saying.
I don't know.
Who has 7 kids? She's not that old. She was born in 1950. How old is she? She's 63.
Good God. Okay.
Anyway.
And she can still become a European Commissioner. I mean, that's pretty good.
She was really impressive this afternoon. And she really did, without doing it, she really wagged her finger.
She's a very slim lady.
Ah.
She's very elegant, very slim.
Yes.
And certainly has kept a figure and very elegant. So you would never say that, yeah.
No, exactly. But you just listen to her speech. So impressive. Mm. Very good. Okay.
And she's hard, eh?
Oh, she's a tough nut.
She's not, tough. Very tough.
She's very good. David, let's have a look at some of the movers on the JSE today.
Bounced at the end, hey? We were actually negative. When New York opened, we went into negative territory and just
in the closing auction, the markets bounce and we managed to hold on to a positive gain. So I just mentioned that because as we started to talk, we were actually negative. And the closing auction came in and we bounced up and ended positive.
Good. Kumba Iron Ore up 3.7%. Woolies up 3.25%. Bidvest was a 2.75% winner. Naspers up 2.75% as well. And Truworths gained by 2.75% on the downside. Goldfields just below 20% weaker. See how that pans out. Harmony fell 5.33%. Maybe everyone said, well, if they're selling Goldfields, then let's sell Harmony as well. So that's down 5.33%. Omnia down 3.9%. 91%. The fund manager down 3.33%, and HCI down 3%. Anything you saw outside of those, David?
Nothing dramatic. I lost my screen for a bit. Just, you know, mainly on the, let's see here. RFG, that's Rhodes Food, was hurt, and it seems to be coming back. For your famous brands, up 4.5%, Cashbuild, nice. Novus, yeah, Udeco. So a lot... Lindsay, we're seeing a lot of buying of small, medium cap shares that are not influencing the index. You know, still every day there's money going into, you know, into these companies. So quite a bit of activity just on the downside there, other than Goldfields and the ones we mentioned. I think those were most of the big fallers. But they, other than Goldfields, certainly on the downside had nothing, you know, couldn't compare with the gains that we've seen in some of these smaller medium caps. So there's confidence coming, which seems peculiar. You know, when I say peculiar, particularly against the oil price that we're seeing and food prices that we're seeing, even though we've also seen downgrades of our economy, there yeah. does seem to be some confidence in some of the smaller businesses.
Good. Well, that's
I don't know how to explain it. I can't explain it. I know that 91 have come out with a statement and said this is by far the best emerging market. You know, we're much steadier than other emerging markets. So it may be that that's attracting some kind of interest. But it's incongruous with where we might see the economy going and the pressure that higher oil and food prices could put on the consumer.
Okay, I'm going to give you the overseas markets. They are 15 minutes delayed on my screen, but I don't think they're too far off. Oh, Dow Jones down 0.8%, the S&P down 0.9%, NASDAQ down 0.8%, so it's across the board, almost uniform selling. And in Europe, FTSE, again, it's we spoke about it the other day. It's very slightly higher today. The DAX in Frankfurt, though, very much not higher, down 1.3%, and the CAC 40 in Paris, 1.4% weaker. David, the JSE indices, please, the ones you watch.
Okay, so the all share ended, as I mentioned, up 0.19%. Mm-hmm. So we're over 72,000 now, 72,095. The top 40 up 0.15% at 65,431. Miners were down, and mainly because of Goldfields and some of the other gold companies that took it down. So the mining precious metals down 4.65. Overall, the resource index down 1.4, but are largely attributed to the falling Goldfields. Banks up for a second day, you know, leading the way, leading this market. Bank index up about 1.48%. And that kept financials quite steady. And then consumers and industrials, okay, up 0.84%. So a fair day. I think gainers, I watch the top 80. I have, I always get my gauge from that, the top 80 highest capitalized shares. And it's probably 1.5 to 1. Yeah. In other words, call that 3 gainers to every 2 losers.
Okay, that's good. And what about the value traded?
The value traded, big. Oi. 49. I don't know what's today.
MSCI.
There must be a rebalancing.
Yeah.
And I promise you, Lindsay, as we came on the air, this was nowhere near these kind of levels.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you some of this. So this is, call this 51, 52 billion today.
Blimey.
And what was the biggest trader? Fashini. Up 8.6%. The Goldfields came in at 7.2%. Naspers, Tiger Brands, all big days. Sasol, Impala, Sunlum. But the big one,
you know, that took place. I don't know whether there's anything around this.
So Fischini must have gone into some index or something. I think so.
I don't know. I could be because the trade there was 4.3 billion rand. I was just going to get Fischini up to see if there was anything. I certainly didn't pick it up going through Sens. No, there's nothing. So it must be a rebalancing.
Yeah.
You know, that took place. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
let's see. We needed Nick. That's when we need Nick because he knows all of this.
Please. Investment committee feedback and everything. We'll switch him on Thursday and bring this up. David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time. I'd love to say that there's a football match tonight, but there isn't. Apart from a friendly between Malta and Venezuela, which even I am not going to watch. So I will speak to you again on Thursday. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.